Flake Effect now on WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. We're outside the Lake Effect studio today, broadcasting from the Riverwalk outside the Chase Tower for this edition of the show.
It is a daunting task to summarize a life well lived. Shortly before her death from cancer in 2007 at age 66, New York painter Elizabeth Murray was one of only five women to have a retrospective exhibit at the Museum of Modern Art in New York. She had made it much earlier than that, starting in the 1980s, but the exhibit was a crowning moment in a career that had involved some risks and a lot of pluck.
Filmmaker Christy Zia met Murray in the late 80s as part of a women's retreat in the Utah wilderness. The small group of mostly artist moms wanted to unwind from careers and city life. Zia, who's worked as a production designer on films directed by Martin Scorsese and Jonathan Demme, became fast friends with Murray.
Zia's documentary, Everybody Knows Elizabeth Murray, is part of the 2017 Milwaukee Film Festival. Zia says that the movie is a celebration of life and Murray's vibrant character and art. She tells Lake Effect's Mayon Silver that she never contemplated the talented painter's untimely death.
I felt like if anybody could beat it, Elizabeth could beat it, because she had such drive, such ambition, such amazing amounts of support and love from her family, and the ability for her to paint even when she was not feeling up to wanting to necessarily paint. I just felt that there was never going to be a moment when she wasn't on this planet. And then when things started to take a turn for the worse, again, and I was with her pretty close to the end of her life, I never really felt like there was despair there. There was such a joy in her being able to paint until she was very, very weak, and appreciate what life had to offer. And I think I wanted to just keep that spirit going in the film. And I had no idea how it was all going to come out at the end, because I just didn't know. Obviously, we never know when it's going to happen. And I thought that she represented a spirit and a way of taking on whatever it was that life was going to give her and process it and make it something that was positive no matter what it was. I think she came out of, you know, quite a serious and rough childhood. And yet you never, ever thought about that when you saw her as an individual.
You touch upon this at various points in the movie, but her father was sort of absentee. He was a gambler. She was homeless for periods. They were, you know, she didn't have a stable childhood. And then can you tell me about her lucky break with art school?
I think that the biggest lucky break was when her teacher swept her up into her life in Chicago and helped and installed her in the Art Institute. The recognition that Elizabeth had that kind of talent was something that rarely happens to any individual.
Yeah. Well, and she had this passion that comes through in the film where she wasn't settled with Chicago. She wanted to get to New York City.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, can you talk a little bit about that? What this sort of drive that she had, you know, every single obstacle that she would come across, it seemed like she kind of plowed through it. At least that's how the film made it seem.
And I think that it's true. I think that she found people who helped her every inch along the way. When she was in Buffalo, up in New York, where she was before she came down into the city, she got a copy of a magazine, an art magazine, and she said, I want to be in this magazine. I want to be doing what these people are doing. I want to get to New York. And then she packed everybody up and went down into the city. I think that that was her drive. That was her amazing drive and ambition. This is what she wanted to do.
One of the other breaks that she got was when she got picked up by a successful art dealer named Paula in New York City. And I think there was a quote from her in the film that said, I think it's the first time I felt any real confidence that I was going to be okay in this world.
Exactly. And Paula Cooper was and is still a major gallerist here in New York City. And for Paula to acknowledge and recognize Elizabeth and have her and represent her in her gallery was an incredible blessing. And it put Elizabeth on the map.
The way that the film opens, you have her painting, and she says, "The more you try and correct a mistake in painting, the worse it gets, until it's such a mess that you have to start over again." And ultimately, she ends up saying, "The way it looks is the way it looks." That was a very interesting way to open the film, because it's sort of an aspect of acceptance in art, like accepting the way things are going to be. But she was such a forward pusher, and she had such ambition. How would that balance with her?
Well, I think it says something about how you have to accept things the way they are, that if you try and fix them too much, you can ruin them. And if you try and push something too far, you could ruin it. And I think that that's always something that I go through in my own life, which is sometimes you just want something so bad that you kind of bulldoze your way into something. And it's never the same. It's never quite as right as it could be if you had just let it happen all by itself. And so there's a little bit of a philosophy there, which is push, but don't push to the point where you break the thing that you're actually trying to do. And I think that in her case, she wants to be an artist, and she is an artist, but she's not going to be an artist at the expense of everything else that she wants in her life. And she also isn't going to try and do something just because of the sake of, well, that's what's happening right now, and so I've got to get on that bandwagon. I mean, one of the big things that happened to her was that she was a painter when no one else was, or there were very, let's say, that's not true, but she was a painter.
It was not as in vogue.
Right. It was not as in vogue. There was a lot of other performance art type things happening, sculpture, film, happenings.
The 70s.
Exactly. It was a big explosion of different kinds of media. And so painting, in a way, was just not that well regarded, or people just wanted something new, something different. So I think that her continuing and staying in the painting world was hard for her in a way, because if she could have, she would have done things that would have gotten her more accepted in that other world, so that, you know, she could make a living at what she was doing. I think that she wound up staying the course, which ultimately gave her a veracity that she would not have had if she had gone off and done other things instead.
In the film, it shows that she had a summer home or a retreat home. Where was that again?
That was upstate New York. It's up in the northern reaches of New York State. That's where she found both peace and did most of her work, and had the peace and the space to do these huge paintings that she started to do later in her career. And I think that that's something that artists always find great spaces to work in. It seems inevitable that both in city and countries, artists always find wonderful environments to work in. And where I'm always looking at where artists work and think, oh my God, that's the most beautiful place in the world. Of course they can do fabulous work if they're there, you know. And I think that she used that as inspiration. And I think she loved, other than painting, I mean, she cooked, she loved to cook, she loved to bake, she loved to camp, she loved to hike. You know, she was a very outdoors type of person. And I think that she loved being up there because it gave her a sense of freedom and also an ability to really focus on her work, which I think when you're in the city, it's just harder. because there's lots more of everything that's going on and that makes demands on you, particularly when you have two young kids.
Well, and you're talking about how full her life was and how many things she was interested in, because it seems like she was looking at the world as an artist, not just making art and having that be her box of art. And then, of course, we didn't even mention that you have Meryl Streep in this documentary reading from her journals, which that is fantastic. Meryl Streep doesn't sound like Meryl Streep. Is she trying to do a voice that's kind of Elizabeth Murray?
Well, as a matter of fact, yes. I think she said to me as we were getting ready to do the recording, she said, I'm just going to do Illinois. And I said, okay, Meryl, you can do Illinois.
That's amazing, because, you know, you'll hear flex of recognizing that it's Meryl Streep, but then I was wondering if that's how Elizabeth Murray sounded.
Yes. Well, you can hear her voice in the film because I have her talking as well, Elizabeth. And there is definitely a sense that Meryl had absorbed and was channeling Elizabeth. Even when we were doing the recording session, it was sort of like Elizabeth was in the room, and I was flabbergasted by how incredibly sympathetic and respectful Meryl was about Elizabeth and what she represented and represents.
You know, there seems to be a sensibility that's kind of similar between Elizabeth Murray and Meryl Streep in terms of the feminist component, because she was painting during a period where there wasn't a lot of celebration necessarily of women painters. Someone said that she was a feminist without having to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, she just kind of lived it.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's true. I think she was a very, very powerful feminist, but she didn't go out into the world and bang drums necessarily in the middle of the street, although I think she was a member of WAC, but I think her way of treating feminism was in the subject matter of her paintings. So many of her paintings, these abstractions, when you look at them and you figure out what you're watching and looking at, you suddenly realize, oh my God, that's a dress. And oh my God, that's a pair of shoes, or that's a necklace, and that's a dress, and there are the arms, and or even her use of domestic elements were a way of bringing those into the forefront of observation. A coffee cup is not just a coffee cup.
Or kitchens or domesticated spaces in some of the paintings.
Exactly. And even though it was somehow or other criticized at some point along the way of these things being domestic elements, there's no reason for them to stay that way. And of course, you know, then you look at Matisse and all the wonderful flowers and the vases and the things that he did and the patterns and the bedrooms and what, you know, the domestic world of Matisse or you know, Cézanne going backwards in time. I think that our whole awareness and understanding of subject matter has finally shifted so that looking at a plate or a bowl or a table or a kitchen or a chair isn't suddenly dropping everything into a very domestic circumstance and minimizing its existence because of that. And I think that while she was actually doing all of that, that mentality was not there. I think there was a kind of dismissal of women painters in general.
This whole theme that you have going through the film and through talking about her is that she just persisted on. She kept moving forward, and she was very true to her voice. And that sort of thing is nice to identify with, whatever kind of painter you are, whatever kind of human being you are.
Right. Well, and the point that I always got from her was just keep doing it. just keep doing it and don't feel for a minute that because it's not igniting the way you would like it to ignite, it doesn't mean that it's not worthwhile doing. And you just have to hold yourself up and push yourself forward. And that's really been, for me, a huge lesson. I mean, the making of this movie has taken over 12 years. And it's still not 100% out there yet. But it took, you know, from 2004 until now. Or, 2004, I think, was when I first started. 2003, 2004. So, you know, there have been times when I have said to myself, I can't keep pushing this rock up a hill. I've got to get on with my life. Mm-hmm. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. But there was something that always brought me back to the fact that this has to happen, that this film has to happen, that her story has to be told, that this is a sign and a guidepost for other people, artists in the world, not necessarily just female artists, but artists, that you just keep going. During her life, she was extremely supportive of other painters and helped whenever she could to get their work out there, to give them advice if they needed advice, whatever she could do to get young painters and young artists out there in the world. She was a real
force, tour de force.
Yeah, she was a real force.
Yeah,
she was a real force.
That's great. It totally came through in this movie, and I'm really happy that I saw it. So Christy Zia, thank you so much for speaking about this on Lake Effect, and thank you for the movie.
Well, thank you. I'm so thrilled that we could talk.
Filmmaker Christy Zia is the director of the documentary Everybody Knows Elizabeth Murray, about the life of the late artist. The film shows one more time at the Milwaukee Film Festival. That's tomorrow at 4 p.m. at the Downer Theater. Zia spoke with Lake Effect's Mayon Silver, and you can see some examples of Murray's work at WUWM.com.